It is 11:15 a.m. Tuesday, October 22nd. This is the in-person interview of CORE Academy of Excellence. The board and technical review panel appreciate that you've come today. We understand that the application process requires time, effort, and intensive commitment, and we wish to thank you for your interest in providing quality educational choices to the children of Arizona. The purpose of this interview is for the applicant to demonstrate how well it understands and has thought through the plan presented in the written application. The interview panel will use the responses to the questions to evaluate the capacity of the applicant to successfully implement the plan as outlined in the application. We will start with the introduction of the interview panel.
I'm Steve Sarmano. I'm the Executive Director of Instructional Support for EdKey Incorporated, and my area of expertise is in the academic and operations plan.
I'm Dr. Amy Schlesman. Got my PhD from the U of A, so it's nice to have some Tucson people here. I've gotten in trouble wearing U of A t-shirts to board meetings, and I'm currently contracting for the school accountability with the Pep Tech schools in Southern Arizona, and on a national advisory committee for helping authorize alternative charter campuses. And something else I wanted to say to you, but I don't remember now, so go ahead.
My name is Kenny De Rueda. I am currently assistant principal at Cactus Canyon Junior High in Apache Junction with the Apache Junction Unified School District. Prior to that, I did work with Intelli Charter Schools here in the Phoenix area. They're an alternative high school program as an educator, administrator, and then
I remember what it was. I'm the past chair of the Northwest YMCA in Tucson. So I thought you might want to know that.
Right by my house.
Their backyard. Mm-hmm.
And I am Rachel Hanna. I represent the board and board staff. I'm the assistant director of charter support.
I will now go over the details of today's interview. The interview will last 90 minutes. The procedures and ground rule for the interview process are as follows. You will be given 5 minutes for introductions and to make your opening statement. I will cue you when you have 1 minute remaining and when the 5 minutes is complete. Expect to spend 2 to 3 minutes on the initial response to each question, allowing time for any follow-up questions made by the interview panel. Feel free to ask for clarification. In order to give you the opportunity to respond to all of our questions during the process, during the response to an individual question, the TRP team lead may ask you to move on and give you the opportunity to address any other responses in your closing statement. When 10 minutes remain in the interview period, you will be asked to make a closing statement of no more than 5 minutes. We will conclude the interview with a description of the next steps. Do you have any questions about the procedure or ground rules for this interview?
No.
I will now turn things over to the TRP team lead who will be running the interview from here.
That's what I'm about to do.
Okay,
so I am the team lead here, so I'm going to ask you to introduce your team and include what role each member played in the application process, as well as what intends to have if the charter is approved.
This is not the 5 minute, this is just a new
meeting. This is opening, you've got five or so minutes for each of you to introduce. And
then we need the 5 minute.
Yeah, so. Yes, and then the opening statement.
So my name is Joe Higgins. I am slated to be the CEO of CORE Academy. Long background in Southern Arizona, served on a number of commissions and boards. 13 years at South Point High School, which is a college prep high school, and then 2 years in Pima Prevention Partnership, which is similar to what Pep Tech does. Ran and started Lehman Academy, was their CEO for 5 years, left about a year ago in January, and that was the fastest growing K-8 in the classical model. So we've been at this project about 2 years.
Me?
Mr. Dan.
Morning. I'm Dan Ranieri. I'm the chairman of the board, designated chairman of the board, and I'll be in that role. Charter's approved. I am a psychologist by training, but I'm not in practice anymore. And I'm a Sun Devil living in Tucson. So,
you know what it feels like,
yeah.
Right?
any event, for the last 25 years, I've been the president and CEO of a large nonprofit behavioral health agency headquartered in Tucson, statewide organization. So I have a lot of experience on the nonprofit governance side. I've also served on numerous other boards. And I was a faculty associate in the Department of Psychology at ASU for 8 years as well. I'm here to address any questions related to governance.
My name is Paul DeWert. I am on the application as the principal for this school. I have 28 years of experience in public education. I started my career as a science teacher at Pueblo High School in Tucson. I spent 20 years at that school doing a lot of different roles. I was an athletic director there. Most of my time at Pueblo was spent as an assistant principal. I did student activities, and then I was, the last part of that, I was in charge of curriculum and instruction. From there, I moved to Mansfield Middle School as the principal, and I served in that role for 4 years. From there, I moved up to the part of town where most of us live, in the northwest part of town, and I was served as the principal for 4 years at Canyon Del Oro High School. And I'm here to answer questions about academic program, continuous improvement, and anything that I can answer to my level of expertise.
All right, my name is David Town, and I grew up in Seattle, and graduated from a school in San Diego, and with a business degree. And so I was selling chili, and then all of a sudden I felt I led to go into teaching. And it was the best decision I've made. So this is my 29th year, and started at Flint Wells Junior High School as an eighth grade teacher. Did that for 10 years and was an instructional coach for many years. Then moved as a principal into a private sector, Bush Ridge Christian Academy, where I was the principal and also the professional development coordinator. And in the last is my fourth year at Lehman Academy of Excellence as the director of professional development. And I'll be answering questions on development, professional development, and coaching teachers and developing a, you know, the induction of new teachers.
Okay, yes, and I guess you have time for your opening statement.
So the project we're talking about is a high school, which would be located up in Marana, our northwest part of Tucson, which is where we're all from. We uniquely know the area, the neighborhood. We've been there for our entire lives. In my prior role with Lehman Academy, the biggest question we would get is, when are you doing a high school? Because the classical model is three stages up into the rhetoric stage, which is high school. And could never really make it happen and materialize. There's a lot of moving parts on a high school and costs and economics and just the details of a high school. And this opportunity presented itself after I left Lehman. Dr. Ranieri and I have been friends, and we were talking about his personal experience in high school and kind of my background in high school. And we've been at this for 2 years trying to come to put together an application that addresses the needs, talks about the financial end, the academic end, and builds a team together around that. David has taught me a lot about classical. That's his background. He's a national speaker on classical education and has been very instrumental. And we were growing at Lehman Academy pretty quickly. We had 125 teachers last year and doubled our enrollment, and things were really, really happening before I left. So really lean on him. Paul is new to my world and my team, but knows the area. There's three big or four big high schools in the region, Paul ran one of them. So he understands our population and the needs. And I think what we all are excited about is to have a blank slate and the ability to say, what would we do if we could make a beautiful classroom? So that's the mission that we're on today. So the application has been worked on by this group, a few other team members that have helped through some of the curriculum pieces to kind of address the needs and questions you all had on those. A lot of things we're going to reference are ideas we perfected in our prior organization, operational. With the rollout strategy we had, my job and my role was always to systematize and be as detailed as we could on curriculum and training and building of campuses and making sure that these teams are supported in the classroom. So that is our discussion today.
Okay. So I'll start it out with our biggest question, really, about the application. And because you talked about systemization,
yes.
And we have at least three curriculum people that can address this. The academic systems plan is written or intended to be written so that an ASPCS staff person could pick it up, and when they come to the school for the first year site visit or whenever it is, and know what they're going to see, and very explicitly see a Or maybe another, if, you know, actually I was corrected, I was going to say if someone gets hit by a bus, but I said, oh no, now we say if someone wins the lottery. So if, you know, the three education people win the lottery and another educational professional takes over, they use it as a guide to run the school. So in the academic systems plan, we were looking for a step-by-step guide about what we would see at the school. And can you talk some more about that?
So clearly by the second review, we didn't address that. So apologies, let me try to explain it verbally, because it's been built out over actual, and I'll tell you the story how we got to where we're at with the academic system plan. First year we opened our campus in 2014, we went through the chartering process. The curriculum we chose, the content, the level was too much. And the classical education is thematic units, so everything connects together. And it just never did that in the beginning. So we developed through time a process, which I hope I can try to explain as a team, where there's a group, a subcommittee led by Paul, including David from his team, anybody in the administrative world, and master teachers. That team meets after our benchmark assessments and reviews all that benchmark data that comes in. The PD team is in the classroom reviewing and monitoring what's happening with the curriculum year one. By our first benchmark and all the way through to AZ Merit by year two, we're starting to have the big discussions of what's working, not working. Feedback loops from the teachers in and out. Then it's a conversation of what are we missing from a curriculum point of view, from a PD point of view, from an assessment point of view, and then what do we do to correct that action. So that is what we're doing in our campuses. NWA benchmark is our benchmark assessment. We sourced and found a program called LODI, which is a teacher evaluation tool. It's designed to be a pop-in. It's based off Danielson Rubric. So we've spent 3 years with that company out of San Diego kind of customizing it to classical ed. So if you can kind of visualize the process, we sit down with the teachers. Danielson Rubric's the top. Are you planned? Are the students engaged? That's what we're looking for. The bottom portion of what we're studying is classical elements, Socratic discussion, some of the unique pieces of classical ed. Our admin team and our PD team are popping into classrooms and looking for these things, looking for fidelity, looking for checking. David works closely with the admin team because they're new, calibrating what classical ed looks like. So everybody's on the same conversation. That scores teachers. And we don't share that with the teachers in the beginning, but it tells us where our weak spots are in PD, where our weak spots are in curriculum. So between benchmark data, LODI scores, and then finally at the end of year, historically, AZ Merit, this committee is reviewing and deciding what stays, what goes, what gets changed, what needs to be PD'd, where we have assessment issues, how the schools run. Anything to add on that? Because we do it every day and we're in it, so.
Does that answer, or?
Well, I'll do one that's more specific, and I realize I preempted question number one, so that will kind of fit in with this afterwards. So, and I'm looking specifically at section one in the academic systems plan when it talks about curriculum. And there's basically one action step at the very beginning of it. And there are, I'm trying to scroll up, sorry. And there are five different subcategories. So within curriculum, then there's adoption of the curriculum, implementation, and you've addressed some of that in your response. But with the action plan itself, there is one action step, and then some of the other subcategories are addressed later in the narrative, but it wasn't clear what the action step is for that thing, who is responsible for it, without looking back to the narrative and then trying to...
So it wasn't in the boxes, but it was in the... Apologies for not being there. So, but the process is the same for all four of those subcategories. Paul's on point, subcommittee, reviewing data that's collected at the different times. Just so happens at the beginning phase, we've been spending a lot of time building out the kind of curriculum map and scope and sequence using Saxon Math. Three of our K-8 feeder schools are all in Saxon Math. So that was a natural fit for us for the math body. The ELA is based on thematic units, so we combed the country looking at classical ed schools and what they're using, picked the classical literature novels to match that up. And then there's a team of folks behind the scenes building out sample lesson plans for the teacher to have when they walk in the door. They can use them or not, it's their choice, but there's a whole bunch of resources there to help them through that.
And a team of people?
There's five of us that are
Okay.
We've already done it for K-8, so high school's new.
Okay.
So, want to get in the weeds a little bit what that looks like? Does that help you?
I think we're going to go with what we're going to ask, and then if we can circle back to it, I want to make sure I don't monopolize.
We can go as deep as we can.
Yeah.
And then maybe you can go in the weeds on this next question, because my question, same thing on the ASP, because that's kind of what we ran into on every section. One indicator, one action step kind of thing, and then you talk about it in the narratives, and it's hard to piece it, and sometimes some of your narrative didn't directly assess or address some of the issues specifically. For example, we have comprehensive assessments. There are 4 subsections. You put about three sentences for action steps, but they don't all align to what they are. So the 4 are developing the assessment system, analyzing assessment data, adapted to meet the needs of subgroups, and then year-to-year comparison. Again, that's for assessment system. Could you kind of tell us, again,
So, respecting the profession of the teacher, we've been very careful not to dictate assessment goals. Inside of our curriculum and our scope and SECUS, we have exit tickets, we have standards of achievement, we are really specific on where we want them to go, but we're not getting into here's what you test. We give them guideposts and guide rails, 40% through quizzes, 20% through written projects. That then directs, we make sure writing prompts are happening and we know that that's moving through. And this is done over time because we saw it not working in our other system. So by putting the benchmarks of internal assessments of the teacher, we know that writing's happening. We know the things that we're trying to measure. That's number one. Number 2 is the NWA benchmark program. I try to get very specific on what that looks like, and that's nationally normed. We started with Galileo at our other campus based on what the Charter Association recommended. Wasn't predicting us very well, so we did a big search. Paul has worked with NWA MAP at AMFI. That's the reason we chose that. So that's been a big important move. So those are 2 important data points coming from teachers. Then when we get into, we got the AZ Merit at the end of the year, that's an historic look. So that's done over the summer in that final meeting. All these data points are telling us a story of where we're missing. So by that first benchmark, which happens right after August, right after we start the school, we can quickly start seeing if there's an issue with curriculum, training, professional development. Subpopulations, special ed directors involved in that process, and all NWA MAP and the assessment program within the teacher's role. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Now I apologize if I didn't hit that right and our team didn't get that answer.
No, that helps me out. Can you kind of go over the year-to-year comparison again? How do you guys plan to do that?
So over the summer,
okay,
the same committee meets that's reviewing every quarterly benchmark assessment. They look at the AZ Merit historic. All the data, all the feedback loops from the teachers are coming in. And what we've seen in our world is teacher X doesn't like this novel. Teacher Y doesn't want to teach this particular one. We started looking for noise of problems with a particular novel from the Lexile School or whatever may fit, doesn't fit the time, whatever it is. If we see enough feedback on that, then we start looking at not bringing that novel back next year.
And then on your committees, is it the same committee that assesses the teacher assessments, your benchmarks, and your AZ Merit?
Yep. It's PD, admin, which is vice principal, principal, any master teachers, if we get to that level, usually by year 2, once we've identified our top teachers. And then the special populations, your SPED team, ELL, and SPED.
And then the frequency, I know that your benchmarks happen quarterly. Or trimester, or and AZ Merit's once a year, but your ongoing assessments, exit, things like that, exit tickets. But with what frequency is that committee meeting to evaluate data?
They're doing it quarterly with the NWA benchmark.
Okay.
These 2 guys are, we bring someone like Paul in because of his academic background. So part of his job requirement is to be dropping into these classrooms and do these loading pop-ins, as with David. So these 2 are talking monthly about problem teachers, problem issues, global PD issues we're seeing as a campus, that he needs to retool their PD world, a major curriculum problem. We ask teachers to have their objective and their goals on board. We're looking for that. We're looking for fidelity to the curriculum they're teaching. We're monitoring that on a regular basis.
If we could, Joe, let's have Dave talk a little bit about the professional development that goes into actually looking at assessment data and how you teach teachers to do that, and then the support that comes behind that. If you could do that, and then I'll try to fill in any questions.
Sure. I mean, we all have our niches. That's what brings passion to me, is coming alongside the teachers because most of us have not been trained classically. I sure wasn't. And so when I started learning this a little bit at the Flowing Wells level and then immersed in it for 15 years at the private sector at a classical school, I fell in love with training these teachers to really understand what classical education is. And the problem I had at the private sector, though, is I would do my work every day working with teachers and cognitive coaching and talking about what it means to be engaged and how to get out of the way and let the text do a lot of the work and how to question and how to do Socratic circles. But we didn't have any kind of system to really give feedback other than my coaching. And so when we came to Lehman Academy, we adopted Lodi, and Lodi is a system. And but it really was more of a traditional school system. So we've been able to put work into it. So this system reflects our mission, our model of classical education. And so I will go in daily with teachers, building that trust because I'm not an evaluator, and have this system in place when it talks about just basic good teaching, engaged learning. Higher level thinking, classroom management, time on task. Those, but then there's these other criteria of integrated thematic units, teacher talk versus scholar talk, humor and fun, higher level thinking, the big why. So these things, and then that goes into a system. I don't show that to them, but it goes into our system, so I can look at that. And right now we have 6 campuses that I get all this data on, and right now I just did a report. And in our system, engaged learning is really low, and that's what we're PDing right now. Another thing that we thought is integration of different subjects are low. So we bring this data together and give a snapshot to the staff or to individuals, and really kind of move that ball forward when it comes to that classical model. So that is where I think it's magic, because before it was just me doing all this work and we were conferencing. But I didn't have a true system in place, and now we have a system in place that will carry on in the high school to really give us a picture of how we're doing, how we're meeting our goals and our mission when it comes to classical education. I think it's fantastic. I'm really excited about it. And I think it helps drive where we're lacking and also where our strengths are, to celebrate what we're doing. Look at this. Not only are you talking about the Civil War in history, but you're also reading about it. And you're also looking at the artists of that time period, and there's this story that's being unfolded. That needs to be celebrated too, so I see it as a great tool.
So the first things that are on my head, in talking specifically about assessment, I think part of what David was alluding to is this using this Lodi tool. Well, part of what you're doing when you're going into a classroom is looking at how students are being evaluated, formative and summative assessment, and so there's a piece of that. I'm thinking as a school principal, in a broader sense of how are we going to look at data. Initially, the only data we're going to have on our students is maybe what they bring with them from eighth grade. And then we'll have our benchmark assessment data to look at. So we'll break that down by gender, by demographics. We'll have all of that broken down so that we can look at each subgroup. What we're looking for are gaps in learning, places that of deficiencies, and all of that needs to come back around and then inform what you're doing instructionally. So that can happen through the PD process, it can happen with one-on-one conversations with teachers, but again, it's kind of that full cycle where you're constantly looking for, are we on target? Are we moving in the direction that we need to move so that our students are being taught what they need to taught to fill in those gaps. Places where we're strong, maybe we don't need to emphasize or spend as much time there. But that's where I live and breathe, right? I'm always looking at what are the things that we need to be improving upon. Assessment data is part of that. I mean, there's other things we can talk about in terms of the culture of the school, right? And but you were asking specifically, I think, about assessment.
Yeah.
Does that get to what you're asking for that piece?
Can I help ask?
Yeah.
Well, and I think some of this was communicated in the narrative that you're telling us now, but what our concern is that there be like a step-by-step guide, because a staff member, or if, like I said, someone, one of you wins the lottery, could someone else come in and say, oh, this is what I need to do or this is what needs to happen at the school in sequential steps. And these are the people responsible, and this is the timeline. That's why the,
yeah, the question
plan is set up, yeah, that way.
So we reference in the narrative, and I thought I did in the other boxes as well, but an eight-step data assessment plan that the teachers do. So we walk them through and train them on what to do with their data and how to differentiate in subgroups, you know, look at strand areas. We're looking at global issues, individual teaching issues, but the teacher's looking at their classroom. Then we're talking about differentiation instruction and how to make sure the teachers are understanding what that looks like. And then we're retesting in the benchmark the second time and making sure that the goals that they've set forth with their class is done. So the process is the teachers are doing an eight-step process, rolls up to the subcommittee, which Paul, mm-hmm, basically is Paul and his designees, and they're moving through this data every time. It's not just a vacuum of NWA map, it's also loading and what's happening with the teacher effectiveness. It's, do we have too much curriculum, not enough curriculum, not enough resources they need? All these things we do now and we plan to do in the high school. Is that, and then the question is, we get rid of curriculum, add curriculum on that world, is the assessment strategy strong enough? Is the rigor there? Is it global? Is it specific? Is it a teacher issue? Is it a class issue? Is it the population coming to the door? Then how do we address that as a team?
So I think,
that makes sense?
Well, I think what we saw in the narrative was we saw that there's an understanding of how these processes work and what the function of the ASP, though, is to systematize that so that it's your operations manual. So on day one, you're there like, I know that this has to happen. Here's my time. Teachers know quarterly the expectation is this. And what we did not see here is a way to, how do we know what's supposed to happen quarterly? How do we know it's going to be, okay, happening biweekly? So if, you know, next year, you know, we're replacing you for whatever reason, you know,
right,
you're like, I'm out of here, Hawaii, I'm done.
Next
guy comes in. Do they have to reinvent everything? Where, right, is their way to know? Because as you have invested all this time in this design, what is your assurance that it's going to be executed to the way you want it designed? So I think we saw that there's an understanding of how assessment works, but what we did not see was, where's that to ensure that things are happening timely, that it's clear who's responsible for those pieces? Because yes, there's the, you know, professional development's happening. LODI assessments are, you know, are supposed to happen this many times a year. Well, who's doing that? How do we know it's happened? What's your system for tracking, ensuring that all the pieces get in the narrative? That, yeah, if we were to say, you know, in October, what's happened? What should we know would have happened?
What should we know by now?
Yeah.
What should we have done by now?
Exactly. So and a lot of it is to take so much of, to me, it's the time-saving piece of, you've done all this work, where's our checklist, so that you can know, if you had to go in and say, do we know the school's doing everything that we wanted, as sort of the board members say, this, they're executing our plan, how would we be able
how
to
know? How does that work best? Does that happen in a calendar forum?
Whatever way you, however you want to do it, we're just looking for, if you have a plan, do you have a way to monitor that it's being executed the,
sure,
way that you've designed that piece? So that's, I think we saw that there's an understanding of the concepts of that, but we didn't see is the action plan of how you would ensure that those things
that
are happening.
That's in the actual.
Yes, of actual specifics, except on this date, this person's responsible for doing these things, they're doing it monthly, quarterly, and how is that being recorded? So if I were to say, well, you're supposed to be doing these LODI observations, okay, how do I know that's been done? What would I see, the,
yeah,
you know, or the follow-up? So there's clearly a process.
You do a report.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So that's the information
there.
That, and I think it's there. It just wasn't sort of synthesized into the action step pieces,
yeah,
is what,
sure,
we're looking for, so that it was a clear,
okay,
implementation plan as sort of the blueprint for how the school will operate.
Yeah, because
sort of,
I'm looking at program,
yeah,
instruction, and there's like this long thing about one action step, with I think two pretty long sentences, and it was just like, okay, but and then the frequency of timing, well, it says by quarter two of year one, so you know that gave us an idea, but I'm sure there is something happening in other quarters, at the beginning of the school year, when your teams get together. That's what we were looking for in the academic systems,
gotcha,
plan. And we're really looking for a system.
So,
yeah,
if there's a knock, is I come from the business world, everything is systematized, right down to the type of wax on the floors.
Yeah.
So it's all there. We do it every day. It's taken us 5 years to perfect it.
Sure.
And now we're taking it to a different model, which is bringing Paul's experience at the high school in. David has moved to a consultant and may not stay with Lehman as we go, so that this is the team that we're putting together to do this again, as we've done it once before. But when you add 125 teachers a year and you double your enrollment, you better have systems in place when things fall through. Right. So,
but to your point, put it in writing.
Right. So yeah. We apologize if it wasn't clear on that.
Because I'm thinking, I'm respecting the staff person that's going to come out for a site visit. It's like the staff person needs to know, that's what I'm going to look for, rather than reading through a narrative and trying to pull the things out, you know, kind of translate them into, oh, can I get this observation? Can I get this done in a few hours? Because I really, you don't want them all there all day, and they don't want to be there all day because they have 500 plus charter schools to oversee. So
in your, you know, process for preparing this and perhaps even the revisions, so did you attend or participate in any training provided by the charter board staff or the charter school association to help you prepare for or review the initial feedback from the initial application?
So yes, a little different scenario than when I first did it in 2014. Okay. Just here. Wasn't as detailed as we're talking. Much more global. So we did
which year?
2014 is when we started the Lehman one. That's when I went through this process with them.
But they just said
with
here,
the association.
So the association. Yes. Okay. That's what I was trying to clarify.
The board I have not. But the association has been very helpful, but just different this time than last time. Last time it was a very regimented process. And you gave us great feedback. So we knew what your issues were, and we thought we addressed them correctly. Okay. I apologize.
That's why we're here today, because there's things that don't come across, and some people are, you know, can articulate it clearly. Some people are more verbal. So this is that chance for us to get clarity, for us to identify those areas and get a sense of things. Can we go to number three there?
So you guys, and then just double checking the application today too. I noticed that you guys did put down $42,900 average salary for teachers on your narrative for the budget and also the three-year budget. But then in your personnel, I think it was in your, but actually in your three-year operational budget narrative, you guys also wrote down $39,000 for teacher salary.
Mistake.
Okay.
You brought it up the first time. The governor had passed the 20% increase, so I looked at all of our local school districts and measured off of that. So that's a mistake.
Okay, so are you guys going with the 42,000? And how would you say that as a compared to the average? Again, I know you guys listed some of that.
I looked at all our local school districts in our region. We looked at master's level, years of experience, all the different variables, and we landed right kind of in the middle. Okay. So we're right in the market. Okay.
And so related to that thing about the qualified staff, we're all curious about where are you going to find teachers who are going to be prepared to do a classical education, because you talked about, I think it was you and he have talked about your high school experiences and they weren't a classical education, and also be able to coach a sport.
So maybe you talk about classical teachers, I'll talk about athletics. How's that sound?
Okay.
So kind of like I said, what I've learned is that at first I was thinking, okay, we need to find these classical educators. The thing is, there's just a few colleges that really produce great classical educators, and they're not in Arizona right now. although the climate's great here, you can't. So I've embraced it, that we are taking great people that have hearts for kids, that love kids, and are coachable, and have integrity, and actually like to read. And I get to train them, and I get to expose them, and a light bulb goes off. What happens is the cycle of the year is that we do a 3-day in-service training, and they are just pumped about this unfolding of this new kind of way of teaching. But I think classical education is just good teaching anyway. But and then life happens, and kids come, and you know they're going, I'm struggling, which is really part of it. And then that's where we come in and guide them and hold their hands. And really, as they become more comfortable with the curriculum, then they actually see the connections that are being made, how to ask questions, how to especially in the trivium, the rhetoric stage of high school, where they're able to actually really get the scholars and the students to think and to get out of the way and know how to ask questions, to allow the text to do a lot of the teaching, to do the role plays and the speaking and the thinking. And many of these teachers that I'm finding when I do these open houses, they are frustrated in the system that they're in because they don't have the freedom or the creativity. They're kind of told what to do and everything. Now they are actually truly artists, and they are embracing this creative curriculum. And so I've seen it as a, used to I thought it was a negative, but then I thought about my own journey. And thinking, I'm so glad they invested in me to teach in a different way. And I've seen that impact so many, many students. So I look at it as a positive as we bring these teachers on and to expose them to this and then walk alongside. I remember my first year of teaching, 91, I was teaching history, and I was so excited about teaching, and I just got through this program that I remember my principal, here's your textbook, good luck. And it's like, wow. I mean, then I saw him once during the year, and it was almost malpractice. You know, I shouldn't have done. And so we what we're trying to do is just come alongside and create a culture of learning with the teachers, and in turn that is passed down to the students. So I don't see it being a problem. In fact, I think it almost renews the zest in teachers who are looking for it.
But it's going to be a challenge. There's no doubt about it. You know, there's very few people, teachers, that have been trained in the classical model. I have a friend who just moved back from Nebraska and became a sixth grade teacher at one of the Lehman schools. He's teaching science. And it's been fun to have conversations with him about it, knowing that I'm kind of in the middle of this, like, and asking him, how's that going for you? Let's tell me about Socratic discussions in your class, you know? What does that look like, and are they helping you? Are you getting the support that you need? So we know that there's going to be work to do there. There's going to be work to do for me. I'm going to need to learn. I didn't come from that model either. You know, being in this process, I've had to kind of wrap my brain around, well, what's different about a classical model? What's it going to look like, feel like, as we're doing something that is different at the high school level than most of the other, except for one of the private schools that's in town. So what's it got to look like? How do we as a school create the environment that's conducive to that, that allows for the kind of thematic unit planning that makes it classical? How do we work with our teachers? One of the components of the Core Academy is an additional year of social studies. How do we work with our teachers to plan and prepare for that so that they understand the scope and sequence of that curriculum? The recruitment of teachers is a challenge in every school in the state. So I've asked Joe this, what's going to make someone want to come to this school and be part of it? I think part of the answer to that is it is a unique situation. We intend for the school to remain small, no more than 1,200 students. We're going to emphasize relationships with kids, small learning communities. We're talking about a house program where we divide students into smaller groups of kids that can work together, multi-grade. So we're looking at different ideas for that. But what's going to make it attractive for somebody to be there will ultimately be the culture that we create at the school with our students, how we support our staff, how we train them. If we can create that environment, which is what I'm passionate about, creating the right culture and environment for a high school, then it'll be looked at as a school where people will want to work. And that, I believe, will help us in our recruitment of teachers.
Going back to your story.
I'm just going to clarify, yeah. I'm cold when the air conditioner comes on, so when I'm doing this, it's because I really need to.
You're not like tensing up.
Yeah, exactly. It's nothing. So no non-verbals. So here's the psychologist, right?
So going back, Paul, to that story of that teacher, the sixth grade teacher,
yeah.
Did they feel, I mean, because I don't know who you're talking about, but did they feel supported and trained in this model?
Well, yeah, I mean, they just jumped in, you know, okay. And so they... they came from, and they hadn't been teaching for a while either, okay. So they had to come back up to speed. They had been an elementary school teacher, went into a different profession for a while, they moved to Nebraska, now they're back, and was hired to teach science. But yeah, I mean, he was explaining to me the professional development piece, how they were working with him weekly on different things, but that's a piece he's having to learn. It's a piece that teachers are going to have to be brought up to speed.
Let me put a cap on it. Before I left, we did a bond offering. Schedule A's are just the details of retention and all kinds of metrics. We were holding 89% to 90% teacher retention, turning down 2 or 3 per run we hired because we supported them. We created a culture where they wanted to work in. We said, slow down, have the big discussions, make the impact on the kids, go deep, and they love it, and the word goes. So we've been really lucky in that world of keeping them because we do a lot of work around them. We respect the profession. So all the stuff I talked to you about, curriculum and this and that, it's still respect of our profession, our professionals. So what role do we play on systems versus, you're an artist, go be an artist. And then when do they get off track, and when do we come back around, and when do we nudge or have a conversation about staying with us?
Well, that's good about the classical education piece. How are you going to add the coaching to that?
His role? What do you mean?
Let me
take a crack.
Okay, because the staffing that I see is that year one you've got 16 teachers and then 8 of them are getting coaching stipends. So that's, I mean, we've got a lot of PD to get them trained up. That's a lot of time, and then they're going to have coaching responsibilities as well.
So I live in that area, and I coached for 10 years. And there are a ton of really good coaches, and except for the high school that Paul used to run, none of them retain any of their coaches because they can't stand the school. They don't like the culture of the school. They don't like the lack of support from administration. But yet those schools are fairly competitive for periods of time. There are lots, and in my understanding, this will be in football,
right,
which makes it a lot easier. But there are a lot of really good coaches in Tucson that would love to go to a high school like this.
Okay.
The other thing that's going to happen is to be a really good and successful coach in a long period of time, it's a 12-month commitment. It's not a 3-month commitment. And a lot of these coaches are involved in club organizations, and they really would love to have a school like this to go to. And believe me, it'll be no problem bringing in the athletes. My daughter was an all-state pitcher. It's 2 state championships at Ironwood Ridge. It's a horrible school. Her education was awful. She had special needs that were not supported. If I had any option like this, she would have been there in a second. The school that he used to be the principal of, they've won more state championships in softball and in baseball, I think, than any school in the state. And it's because of the support and the culture at that school. Same thing. I don't think it's going to be a problem.
From a budgetary point of view, which is, I think, where they're going.
Yeah.
Well, actually, even the individuals, so
right.
Thank you very much.
Well, and I've been involved in this from the very beginning. I've been involved in this since before Joe came on board. We've had some of the top coaches in Tucson say, how do I get involved in this? And some of them are junior college coaches.
And as long as they meet the requirements to coach, it doesn't necessarily mean they're a faculty member.
Right.
Okay. I imagine a school that has a good number of first, second, third year teachers. I imagine a school that we have some maybe retired teachers that want to come back and teach part-time, right, that have specific fields of expertise, maybe physics or chemistry, where they come in and teach 3 classes. I imagine as the school grows, we will have an interesting group of faculty members, some who coach and came there for that opportunity to do both, others that are simply coaching. But I imagine a very diverse faculty and coaching staff.
There's already 4 to 6 prominent coaches in Southern Arizona who made serious inquiry.
But Steve, you bring up a good point, because I'm selfish when it comes to, it takes time. Yeah. It takes a lot of work to become a very passionate, effective classical teacher. And so I've always been kind of, you know, first-year teachers, you have a lot on your plate right now. So I'm with you on that, and we work that out. But because it does, it takes a lot of time, the PD time, the coaching time with me, with them after school, is very vital in their growth. So I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, but I think Paul sort of clarified one of our concerns, because it wasn't clear in terms of...
It looked like they had to.
It was like...
The faculty members had to coach.
Right, so the fact that you've got some flexibility, and some may just be strictly classroom teachers, some may just be there coaching, some may be doing both, so that...
So the club coaches really want to participate in AIA.
Right.
So we give them the opportunity.
Got it.
And then, of course, they have a bunch of club team members that come to the school, so it's a recruitment issue as well. Our big thing was academics and athletics, so the combination of the two, that would be a part of the discussion. So the campus is built for that.
That gets to the next question, which is, you talk about expecting to enroll 275 ninth graders in that first year. Now, I know you have a relationship with Lehman Academy, and you state that they've got 250 graduating eighth graders, but we in Charter World know that, you know, that eighth grade to high school isn't always a continuous pipeline. So if you could talk a little bit about your strategy for recruiting, you know, those middle school students to hit those, that target that you've got for year one.
Sure. So there's actually three feeder schools that we're looking at closely. Legacy Traditional is about 2 or 3 miles from this campus. And then the two classical K-8s, which are 100. So there's about 375 eighth graders just in a charter model or in a classical model. There are no high school options up in the region except for the big public schools, which we're always part of. We knew we had to have a bigger offering, because when you look at a basis, when there's that move from eighth grade to ninth grade, they don't have the athletics and the orchestras and the college experience, the high school experience. So we knew we had to incorporate that to meet the needs of the population. So I'm pretty comfortable with the freshman class. The sophomore class is a question, and we've decided not to go junior senior until we matriculate up. But we know the market, that's our backyard. When we opened up the Lehman Academy, which is a couple miles away, 500, 1,000. I mean, it's been a charter island. There are no choices in the northwest side of town. There's the private classical school, which is about $10,000-$12,000, which is not attainable to everybody. So we knew what our families uniquely want, and that's why athletics is a component of the draw. The feeder schools at the Sacks and all the pieces we do, the values virtues component. I mean, we are, I mentioned earlier, I've been on a board of a private high school. Came from probably. We want to provide this type of education to everybody because we see the value in it. So that's
and that's why I'm here. Because I spent 15 years at that classical school, loved every second of it. But not everybody could come to that school. And it really bummed me out. I was in those interviews where financially, or they took the entry exam and they didn't make it, and it just killed me because that's not my heart for education. And so that's what brought me to Lehman Academy, and that's what's really driving me for high school, because there's really not a choice. And this gives, and I think also homeschool parents, and we homeschool their kids for a while, that they're looking for opportunities in high school. Parents are getting tired, they're getting intimidated by the science curriculum or the math. I think that's going to be
middle school, high school.
Yeah, I'd agree with all that. Having been at CDO, I didn't realize what a significant portion of my job would be simply marketing and recruitment of students. Open enrollment became a huge thing. And so I was going down to Legacy to meet kids, to tell them about my school. Well, I imagine we'll be doing the same thing. We'll be hoping, you know, we'll have open houses. And I just know that in the area where this school is going to be, it sits right between Mountain View High School and Marana High School, which are two very large public schools. It sits in the middle of Continental Ranch, which is just to the west of Interstate 10. It's very close to one of the Lehman schools. It's a stone's throw away from Legacy. There are a lot of families in this area who are very savvy about school and school choice, and they're going to be looking for the best option for their kid. As a school principal, my line to parents was always, you need to find the school that's the best fit for your child. Let me tell you about our school and why I believe it could be the best fit for your child. This is what we have to offer. I think there's going to be a lot of interest in this.
We detail the marketing budget, but we've been marketing in this market for a long time, and we know exactly where to buy and how to buy and what to do. So we're pretty comfortable.
And just kind of follow up on that one. And you know, I strongly believe you guys are familiar with the region. but just say your enrollment's not where you want it to be. What is your contingency plan?
So labor is the first place, because you have to have teachers to teach the staff that comes in. Number two is the lending of the building. So the building we do in phases, and it can grow over time or slow or fast, and we set that structure up with our lenders as we build the campus. They very well know their soft enrollment. They've funded a couple of our Lehman projects. They know that if we're involved, it'll go well. But there's grace there if we have an issue, and it'll be tacked on probably to the end of the project and refinanced out. Okay. So we have never had that problem.
And I think part of the answer to that question is you extend your reach, right? You extend how much marketing you're doing, the ways that you're trying to extend your reach out to the community, different parts of the community that might be interested in your school. But I think you have to look at that as, you know, if you have what you need already, can kind of scale back, but if you're not where you want to be, you got to work harder and figure out solutions.
Well, this is also in the fastest growing, most rapidly growing part of the greater Tucson area, particularly for younger families. I don't think there's any other part that's grown nearly as fast, and there just aren't a lot of affordable options there. I mean, there's basis, and that's it. The public high schools, with the exception of CDO, aren't very good. A lot of folks want to go to Cell Point, which is a private Catholic school that Joe's on the board of, but it's expensive, and it's way far away from there. So I think the opportunity is ripe, and it's still developing in that area. There's still a lot of undeveloped land that's being developed, and they're usually master plan communities. So they're popping up new K-8 schools all over the place.
And so the funding on this, I'm a little more cautious. Like the American Leadership Academy up here comes and does 40 acres and just goes. We're doing this very intentionally in three stages so that we can make gates and then hits and then move forward if it works. So it could take us 5 years or 3 years or whatever it is. So we've been there.
Okay, so I'm going to change to a question, which I'm sure you're going to be able to answer. But with my background, looking at the syntax, of the organizational chart, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and the contracted business services are just kind of hanging out there on the org chart without any lines or any indication of.
I think
any back and forth, and then some of the arrows are one way.
Oh, okay, so there should be two. Okay.
Well, that's the question. Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. We're supposed to ask the question.
Any contracted services is a two-way relationship. I try to get who's on point and who's managing those options. In the narrative, we try to go into detail of the contracted services, who they are, what gates they where they come from, what gates we use to choose them, how the board selects them, criteria for all that.
Yeah, we understood that, but
okay.
When we looked at the org charts, like, is this really
one-way
communication,
who has oversight, or where's
so
that?
We're trying to bifurcate it. Okay. I report to the board, and I manage a lot of the business services,
okay.
From HR to marketing to other different pieces.
Okay.
Paul reports to me, and he's academic.
Okay.
So we tried to make it very clear in the narrative, and hopefully, I'm sorry if I didn't do it right correctly, in the academic side.
Okay.
Paul's on point academics. I'm making sure he's supported and the finances are. We're not using any CMO, so outside attorney, ADP for payroll, outside accountants, IT outside, agency outside. So we try to explain that. And then the vendors we use from the curriculum academic side. And then there was a question about our special ed rates and fees. Those are directly what we're paying currently at our other campuses at Show Local Market. So we're not able to. And then, as Dan was mentioning from a governance point of view, this is the line of communication from an operational point of view to make sure that we're hitting our benchmarks. We talked a little bit about a student advisory committee, or a school advisory committee, SAC, which allows an opportunity for parents to be engaged and refer information back and forth up through the board.
And when do you plan to, because is the SAC in the org chart?
No, it's not. It's in the narrative. So SAC is a non-voting, no governance, but what their main goal is every year is to have a called the Net Promoter Score, where you poll your team, students, stakeholders, parents, teachers, how we doing, and those effects.
So do they report to the principal or the CEO?
They would do an annual report to the board, or to the governing board.
The governing board, okay.
Yeah, they're an advisor.
So that could be a dotted line or something like that?
Advisory body to the governing board.
Okay.
Essentially, our eyes and ears in the community.
And we've done that, it's been great. So you have a mom on there, you have some of the coaches, you have teachers, so it's a conduit of communications back and forth. So I need more arrows, right?
No, we just, we're a clarification.
And actually, that would have been, it's a little syntax to talk about.
He would have done it, but he doesn't know how to do the arrows.
I know. I know, sometimes.
Yeah, it's just one of those areas we just want to clarify.
I was typing a grant proposal once, and I didn't have the page, like the dot dot, it was in the old days before, and actually, I wasn't typing, I was keying it on a keyboard. But it's like, and I was working with this, we really need to have this line up, and I just said, I can't. I ended it up on my.
Yeah, I'm doing one for an annual report to my board, our annual meeting next day. Finally, I just got somebody said, you need to do this.
Right.
I'll draw it, and then you can agree on it.
Getting into, this is in budget, in the budget assumptions narrative. So page 2 of section C4 says that the teaching staff will decorate their rooms and dispose of materials. Custodial is going to start at the beginning of the school year. Typically, you know, contracts provide buildings ready to open with floors waxed. But when I look at the timeline, your principal and operations manager are going to begin on or around April. So how is custodial going to be taken care of to get, I mean, does the building just not get cleaned during that time? If you could sort of clarify.
So part of our contract with the general contractor is a turned over waxed windows, ready building. Okay.
But if people are working in that building between then and when teachers show up on July 1st, so there's nobody in there emptying trash or taking care of those things between.
We haven't done it yet. We all kind of step up and take care of it. So
okay.
That's when we start up when the budget starts. It's usually the janitorial service. And we've looked at inside, outside. I mean, we've gone through all this maturations of how to do clean. But it starts when the budget starts.
Okay.
It's not unheard of for us to be taking out garbage. Paul, did you get that in the memo?
That's actually one of the things that
I worked in a charter school like that, where you had a cleaning schedule.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
My kids, when they were younger, and they'd come to visit me at school, people would ask them, what does your dad do? He picks up trash. They thought that was my job. It's all right. It's modeling the right thing.
So I was interested to hear when we talked earlier about assessment and some of the things that were said. I even wrote down who said it. I can't remember now. But you know, not telling the teachers what to do about the formative assessment within the class. In section, so I'm going back to the academic part of the application, A32, with graduation requirements, it states, the process for awarding course credit will be based upon successful completion of the course with a final grade of 60% or higher and at least 90% attendance. Describe how you explain to a parent of a student who comes in and says, my student earned whatever the score is that's significantly more than 60%, but may not have had the 90% attendance. Why are you not going to get credit for this course?
Paul, do you want to, how the attendance conversation happened? Excused versus unexcused, that's another angle that could be happening. So
yeah, there's different ways to deal with that, but yeah, a minimum, in terms of having students in class for a required amount of time, an appropriate amount of time, that's why the attendance piece, I know that attendance in the public schools where I've been has been an issue with students, and there are state statutes, I believe, that say you have to be in class this amount of time. So what we did is we would oftentimes, you know, if the students didn't get those excused, we had a small review committee. They could petition to explain why they were absent, or there was a mechanism in place for that. The 90% piece in this, Joe, you wrote that in, right?
Right. I think the state average is 80.
So we're talking unexcused absences?
I think that's the bifurcation.
Okay.
There's consecutive. There can be excused if you're taking a trip to Europe or something like that.
Right, and that's what we're trying to sort of just...
to clean that up.
Okay, yeah, just trying to understand what, you know, if it was a hard and fast, hey, this took your kid out and he's been absent this many, no credit, or sort of what the nuances of that we're going to be.
Yeah, I think that opens up a big discussion that Dr. Muir and I were having. About board policies and governance policies and things that the charter board, the charter association, kind of gives models to start talking about as we go. We've come up with a gazillion of them over time because we have problems that pop up. That's one to be looked at.
I understand if the kid's not in class, they can't be learning. So you got to draw a line, but.
But then if it's a classical education and the family's going to Europe and they're going to visit museums and...
There can be mechanisms in place. You can make exceptions.
Depends what they're doing, right?
And so we had those students, if they were going to be gone for an extended amount of time, we had petitions for absences that explain why they were going to be gone. A lot of that had to do with the unexcused pieces, just kids that are not attending.
Right.
Which is part of what you're, you know, it's another one of the pieces of assessment that you're looking at. It's like...
Right.
Our achievement data is where, you know, what is our attendance rate? It's a critical piece to be monitoring all the time and looking for kids that have attendance issues so that you can begin the process of meeting with parents, talking about what's going on, providing additional supports as necessary, having hard conversations about why aren't you here, you know, what that's going to look like, what you're going to do, or how you're undermining your potential for staying on track for graduation.
And that brings up to mind too, community college credits and advanced maths, and there's a whole process that would have to be established. Paul has worked in the past, Chancellor Lambert's close with us in Northern World, about what that looks like for our kids on college track. We have a couple years to have that discussion until we flush that out. But I know in our schools there's a couple where they're in the really advanced maths.
Kids will be so accelerated in that, you know, that they need, so we would essentially work with the community college too.
So you have plans for either dual credit or maybe
exactly.
Even having students attend classes at PCC?
Paul had a process with international baccalaureate, working with the EAP model, and let the department chairs determine that as one of the assessment scores.
We will not pursue the international baccalaureate piece. The advanced ones will be suitable.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Anything you need to clarify?
So you now have 5 minutes to make a closing. And board staff will cue you when you have 1 minute remaining and when your 5 minutes is complete.
Okay. So, number one, thanks for this monster and help and the feedback loop. And, you know, with our team working, what we miss. So it's great feedback. Thank you. I think in my prior role, the biggest thing I heard is how do I continue in the classical model for high school? We are at a charter island. There is no choice in the region. We know it like the back of our hand through kids, principals, 25, 30 years in this field. I hope we conveyed upon you the systems and the processes behind the scenes that are there to support the teachers in the classroom. We know we're going to have hiccups with finding them, training them, keeping them to go. We've been doing that on a regular basis every day, but we're going to throw it together with these teachers. We have a chance to impact lives. This is essentially a private education for free, is what we're trying to achieve. The parent and the student is our client, and we wake up every day wondering what they need and how do we address their particular wants. Our teaching staff is trained and professionally brought up. That's a big investment we are making, which a lot of startups do not make. But when my prior organization had 90% teacher retention rate, that's an important part as we have long-term good teaching in the classroom. Everything behind the scenes, we're trying to anticipate their needs and be prepared for them to have exactly what they need. Athletics are an important component of what we do. We want scholar athletes, as is the arts, as is orchestra and theater, digital arts, the whole package builds a well-rounded child and a well-rounded adult that's ready to go on into life beyond. It could be college prep, could be technical trades, could be military. We're preparing them for the next stage of life. And that's us.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's two things that really excite me about this opportunity. In the idea of a new school, having the opportunity to, you heard me talk about culture, and having been in school leadership for a long time, I realized how important creating a welcoming learning environment that challenges kids, but it's a place where they want to be, is really critical. And I think we have an opportunity to create that kind of place. The other thing that really excites me about this, I always felt as a school leader it was my job to be the leader on character and integrity. I needed to model that for my students. And one of the premises of classical education is the values and virtues piece, the character education piece. And I'm really excited that that's part of what this is all about, because I think that's a lot about what I'm about, and being able to kind of model that and create that within the school culture at work.
Can I add something? Do I have a minute? 30 seconds, I'll be quick. Observing teachers that are kindergarten teachers to high school, I've learned and come to the conclusion that no matter what age they are, students want to be known, they want to be loved, and they want to be challenged. And that is so, so important. And I think that's what we bring, which we've done in our past, and to bring in high school in that region. So that's what really excites me.
Wait a couple seconds. I just wanted to say, so.
You notice we didn't have any governance questions.
But, well, you know, I've been a CEO for a long time, and which means I'm in charge of a lot of stuff, and I really have to know my area really well. This whole thing has made me pretty nervous because I don't know it really well. You know, I taught college for 8 years. That's nothing compared to this. In my role, the organization I run, we see people who are on access or indigent, so in a lot of ways we see a lot of society's values. And I'm convinced a lot of that happens at kind of the intersection between middle schools and high schools. We've been looking for ways to try to impact that. I've learned a lot listening to your questions. I learn a lot when I'm around these guys. I'm not as nervous about this as I was before, because we have people who know what they're doing. And that gives me some comfort, because I'm not an expert in this area. The governance piece I know, the content of it I don't. I feel real comfortable with this team. I appreciate them, and I appreciate having the opportunity with you folks today.
Thank you. So to conclude the in-person interview, I will describe what will be happening next. So we, the technical review panel, will evaluate the scores from the review of your written application, as well as the findings from the interview. And this will include whether your written application met the scoring criteria specified in the application, and whether the interview panel finds sufficient capacity to operate a charter school. Next, a recommendation report will be submitted to board staff and will be presented to the board at the December 9th, 2019 meeting. This will be a full-day meeting that will begin at 9 a.m. We anticipate that this will be a long meeting, so be prepared for the possibility that your application may be considered on December 10th if the meeting runs long. If you have any questions about the next steps, please contact Rachel Hanna, the board's assistant director of charter support and accountability. You have a copy of her card. Once again, the Arizona State Board for Charter Schools, we, the technical review panel, and the board staff would like to thank you for coming today and for your interest in providing quality educational choice to the children of Arizona.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Process.
Really nice.